So we're just 3 days away from the Anchorage International Film Festival featuring international films and filmmakers. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The group of entrants is better than ever as the festival moves into its second decade. It's become part of the cultural fabric of our state. Our toll-free number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, statewide and toll-free. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. Alaska and the Dream Factory are the subject today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnickarm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnickarm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, if you're a filmmaker or if you're not, any thoughts you have, any questions, any comments, feel free to call us at Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. We've gone into the subject before, and it's a very interesting one. It goes to the issue of the cultural mass of our state, and it's becoming mature as a state. I mean, we have our own film festival. It really happens, and it's really real, and it's really competitive. And today we have with us executive director of the festival, the Anchorage International Film Festival, Teresa Scott. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve.
And Jim Parker, who is the program director this year. Jim, you've been promoted.
Thank you.
You did shorts last year?
Last year I did documentaries. I was a programmer for documentaries.
And this time you're doing the whole schmagegi.
That's right.
Well, tell me about it. The program was just finalized last week, I would assume?
That's right. We're just making additions until the last minute, but we're finally finalized, we hope.
And how many screens will be used this year?
Do you mean how many venues do we have?
Yeah.
We have several venues. We have a film showing at the Beartooth, at the Alaska Experience Theater, both the large theater there and the smaller one, at the Anchorage Museum, at Alaska Community Works. And Teresa, am I forgetting any other places?
I think it's Anchorage Community Works.
Anchorage Community Works.
And we do have at least one screening at Inlet Tower Hotel, which is our sponsor hotel.
And also, I should mention at Mad Myrna's.
Cool.
Yeah.
You've expanded venues again, and you lost out north, which I guess is not functioning now.
That's true. That's true.
But you've got Community Works?
It's an arts organization there on Ship Creek, mm-hmm. down by the Ulu Factory.
Yeah.
So
they'll be kind of downtown. A lot of the venues are more or less downtown. You got the museum, you got your Experience Theater.
And also the library, I should have mentioned.
Yeah.
It's coming right to me. Yeah, we have several things showing at the library, including a family day on Saturday morning.
Which is free.
Yes.
Yeah. And a good one, I think.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a good outlet for the festival. Well, I haven't looked real closely at the program, but what I saw was very intriguing. And one thing that interested me was the quality of the international entries. I guess I'll ask you, Teresa. This emphasis on international film seems to have paid off.
Well, we do encourage independent film. That's part of our motto, I guess.
Yeah.
And we get entries from everywhere, all across the world. And this year we have filmmakers coming from Canada, an Iranian filmmaker coming in via Chicago, Paris, France, London, Australia, Japan, all across the U.S. We've got about 30 filmmakers coming in from out of state, and then several in-state and local here in town.
Well, that's crazy. And a lot of them will probably be in the same hotel then.
Maybe. We try to be as accommodating as possible.
And I was just thinking, in terms of cultural mass, it's kind of neat if everybody gets to know one another in that.
Well, we try to plan events for the filmmakers. Yeah. We are renting a van, so we shuttle them around, pick them up from the airport, so forth. Try to plan some special events just for the filmmakers. One of our primary goals is to make them feel as welcome as possible. And over the years, this is my eighth year with the festival, and I've had so many filmmakers say to me, this is the best film festival I've ever attended.
I guess in some ways the pressure's off here.
Well, it's freeing.
I mean, I'm not saying it's
freeing.
It is.
Yeah. It's freeing because it's a new environment for the majority of them, it's kind of this winter wonderland they're coming to, the vast majority of them they have a blast when they come up here.
Well, I would hope they would. It's not really the most friendly environment to suddenly bring people from southern climes into.
Right, so. Right. Well, we tell everybody dress warm.
and then you have to have the gear to loan them anyway because they didn't really know what that meant.
Well, I think most people do. They bring enough warm clothing.
So. I guess you have to be a bit of a hardy soul to be a filmmaker to start with, for Pete's sake.
I think so. Any type of art, you have to be tough. So,
location work, has its adversities,
right?
And you've got the whole business of dealing with people. Filmmaking is extremely collaborative. That's one of the things that kept me out of it, really, was because you had to bring a whole team together and everybody had to work together. And it was never the product of any one person, totally. It just couldn't be.
Right.
And then there's the matter of the budget, what you would like to do and what you can afford to do. And
right.
What kind of light you can wait around for, and goes on and goes on. Well, Jim Parker, tell me a little bit about what we get to see and how many of them. I know there's always a great number of entries. Maybe you have the numbers. I don't know the basic 101, how many things were entered, how many are going to be shown, and how many of them get seen more than once.
We have something like 125 films this year, so it's not really possible to talk about all of them.
No, of course not.
We really try to show films twice. And with just a few exceptions, we've succeeded. Most things are shown in two venues. A lot of the short films are going to be shown at the Alaska Experience, the larger venue, and also at the smaller venue. We are showing mostly features at the Beartooth. And we're lucky to have, as Teresa mentioned, a number, much more than last year, of filmmakers coming. And at the Beartooth, most of the showings at the Beartooth are going to have the director there, and there's going to be an opportunity for a question and answer session afterwards. There's so many good movies, Steve, and I can't talk about all of them, but I do want to mention our opening night film. We're really pleased and excited that this year we're having on Friday night as our opening night film documentary called Icebound. And Icebound is an excellent film that's about the 1925 diphtheria serum run from Nanana to Nome. And it's very famous in Alaska history, and it's also famous because Steven Spielberg made the animated film Balto. But this film is a really great mixture of archival footage and independent cinematography, and it tells a story in a great way. And there are a lot of people interviewed in the film that your listeners would have read or know about. Various mushers are interviewed. Craig Nedrin makes an appearance. Stephen Haycox, Dermot Cole. We are lucky also that we are bringing up, through the filmmaker's help, many of the people who are in the film, including descendants of survivors of the diphtheria epidemic in 1925. And there's one survivor who's coming up, who she must be in her 90s, and she's coming up from Juneau. So it's a great film, and we are really fortunate to have it, and we're pleased. And Icebound is showing on Friday night, but it's also being shown again for people that can't go to opening night, again at the Inlet Tower at 1 o'clock. And then afterwards, there's an opportunity for people to talk to the director, Danny Aker.
And when you say 1 o'clock, you mean a.m.?
What do
you?
So I should, 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
And that'll be on what, Saturday or what day?
That would be
Saturday.
Let's see. Saturday.
Saturday. The 7th.
The following?
Saturday the 7th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's,
at the Inlet Tower.
It's thundering down upon us.
Yes. So Icebound is, we're really pleased about that. But you mentioned the international nature of our festival. And we do take that seriously. We also take seriously trying to bring... get films from local Alaska filmmakers. But as program director, I think it's very important that we try to become more international. And I think that is important because it reflects the nature of Anchorage. As you're probably aware, Anchorage is becoming more and more diverse every year. I can't remember the number of languages spoken in the Anchorage School District, but something like 95.
Yeah, somewhere in the 90s. Yeah.
Mountain View is the most diverse zip code in the United States. So by emphasizing it, we don't just want to pay lip service to the international in our title, but really try to bring films in it. And this year and in past years, we didn't just wait to see what showed up from other countries, what films were submitted, but we actively recruited and solicited films from other countries. So I think we've done a good job. And as Teresa said, we have filmmakers, very excited about the filmmaker and his wife who are coming from Iran. That sort of surprised us. I didn't know how easy it would be for them to get visas. And
yeah, really?
Yeah.
But they made it.
They made it. We've lined up a Farsi translator for them.
Oh, yeah.
Their film, the director is named Purya Azerbaijani, and his wife was the screenwriter. And their film is showing, I don't have all these in my head, but I have them written down, at, let's see, the museum on the 8th, and again at the Alaska Experience Small Theater on the 12th of December.
Okay.
And that film is Everything Is Fine Here?
Everything Is Fine Here. That's right. It's English, not its Farsi title, which I can't pronounce.
Can you give me some feeling for what it's...
It's about, I won't go into too much detail because if I tell you, I don't want to spoil it, but it's about the plight of women in Iran, and I thought it was a brave film and a powerful film, and it's shot in Tehran.
And it's this is under the mullahs and everything. This is not a historical past film. This is the way things are now.
It's supposed to be contemporary. Yeah, it's set in contemporary Tehran.
Oh, yeah.
We have a filmmaker, the director and producer of a film called Tu seras un homme, You'll Be a Man, a French film, which was one of my favorites. They're coming all the way from Paris. We have filmmakers from Los Angeles. We have filmmakers coming from New York. And we're excited about the possibility of the audience interacting with them and having question-answer sessions.
Yeah, well, I'm excited that they even come along with their films. I mean, to me, this is the most significant thing the festival does. First, that it exists, that's significant. But that there's no way as an audience member that I'd be able to see most of the things that come for this. And particularly stuff from other countries, you know, those have really been huge highlights for me because there's no way I would even know what to look for to find these gems and these treasures that come out of other cultures, you know. I mean, sure, you might be able to make your way around Chinese martial arts extravaganzas.
Sure.
you might acquire about something about this or that genre of foreign filmmaking, but most of it is just happening out there and never really getting to the screens in this country unless it's some kind of art house.
Can I say one other thing about foreign filmmaking? I really want to give credit to the Mexican consulate, who last year, and maybe in years past, but I know last year they did it, and this year they sponsored a show, and they've done a really wonderful job of getting us great films. They are bringing up a filmmaker who did a documentary that's being shown. His name is Carlos Hagerman. He's a well-known Mexican filmmaker, and his film, which is called Vuelve a la Vida, Back to Life, is showing on the 11th at the Beartooth, and then he'll be able to answer questions afterwards. And there's also on the 10th at Inlet Tower, there's a workshop where he'll be talking about the current state of the Mexican film industry. They also obtained a really great feature called Youth. This is the translation, Juventud, and that's by a very famous Mexican director who I've been reading about, who's known as the Mexican Pedro Almodovar. And he's kind of wild. He is openly gay and has directed films a lot about social mores in Mexico. So we're very fortunate to have that. And they also gave us some shorts that were at a festival in Mexico last year and were all prize winning. So I want to give them credit, and I hope people will come out. We have definitely films for our Spanish-speaking community. And we also have a film from Paraguay that I really like called Seven Boxes. And it's interesting. It's set in the capital. It's a heist movie. It's fast-paced. I think anybody would like it. It's in Spanish in the native Paraguayan language, Guarani, and even a little bit of Korean. So it's truly international film.
Teresa Scott, how does the admission situation work? Is it the same deal where a person can get a pass and then explain how that works in terms of who gets seated first and all that?
Passes are on sale at the Beartooth. Uh-huh. We'll also have some passes available at Alaska Experience Theater. If you have a pass, you still have to go through and get a ticket so we can keep count of who's attending each film. Beartooth and Alaska Experience do their own box offices. Tickets for individual films are $8. Special events like our opening night film and gala, those are varying prices. With a pass, the ticket for the opening night is $15. Without a pass, it's $30. This morning, in fact, in about 10 minutes, tickets go on sale at the Beartooth for films this week up to next Thursday. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yeah.
Up to next Thursday, and then next Tuesday, the remaining days of the festival will go on sale at the Beartooth.
So a pass is how much?
$100.
Uh-huh. That's the same as last year, I think.
Same as last year. It's been the same for the past, I think, 3 or 4 years.
And the pass entitles one to any of the films.
It's an all films pass.
Right. As much as you can stand. But the problem is you can't possibly, your eyeballs would drop out.
But it's worth it. I mean, if you just go see 8 to 10 films, right, the pass is paid for itself.
Yeah.
And it all comes back to the festival and goes into trying to bring more filmmakers up. And since we're a nonprofit, whoever would like to give us money, we're happy to have sponsors and we're always looking for people to make donations to the festival.
What tends to happen is certain things there gets to be a buzz about, especially when the second screening comes around. And they sell out.
Are we doing Best of the Fest this year?
We are on Sunday night at the Beartooth.
Okay.
At 8 o'clock. Uh-huh. That's Sunday, December the 15th.
Just one film, or?
I think that we're showing at least the best feature. I'm not sure about whether we're showing the best doc. I think I'm not sure. I should find out.
Okay. And he's in charge.
Yeah.
He isn't. I mean, program questions.
The schedule says Jim. Best feature, so I think it's just best feature.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah.
So there won't be that deal where there's a second week of the festival, which is essentially a boiling down of what happened earlier.
No, we haven't been able to do that this year. In years past, we've had 3 or 4 days where we've done Best of the Fest at the Beartooth.
Maybe it's just outgrown it.
We just couldn't get it fitted into a schedule.
And, right.
Too many other things going on in town this time of year.
Isn't that something? Winter in Anchorage, Alaska. too many things going
many
on.
Things to do.
What, pray tell, would that be? Telephone number 1-800-478-8255. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. We're talking about the Anchorage International Film Festival, which is thundering down upon us starting on Friday evening. And so we have two of the prime movers here in the studio with us to talk about the festival and talk with you. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And we have a filmmaker, Tim Phillips, calling in from Los Angeles. Are you acquainted, Mr. Parker, with Tim and his...
I certainly am. He is the director of a wonderful documentary called Lion Ark, which we're proud to be showing. And I assume Tim might be calling to tell us a little bit about it.
Tim, are you on?
I am indeed.
Well, all right. Now, tell me about this documentary of yours.
Well, it's a documentary. It's filmed very much as a sort of live action drama in many ways. It's filmed in real time, and it's sort of a bit short on talking heads and sort of big on live conversations, live action. And it's a story of how the ban on animals in circuses was secured in Bolivia and how it was enforced. This was a country with very few resources, and myself and Jan Creamer, a producer of the film, went back to enforce the legislation, and we went round. Most circuses simply defied the law, and we went round seizing these lions from 8 different circuses spread all over this incredible, huge, beautiful country. And then flew them to the USA, and it's about the sort of change in circumstance for those lions. They're the big stars of the film.
Oh, so it's not about how do you suddenly how in the world do you seize a lion? I was thinking about the mechanics of that, and that seemed a little problematical.
Well, it's the whole thing, really. I mean, it's sort of quite dramatic in that there's big confrontations between the rescuers and the circuses who don't want to hand over these lions. There's also the logistical issues in that these are big, powerful animals, and they're in sort of cages that are pretty much falling apart in the hands of the rescuers. So there's that kind of drama and logistics, and then there's sort of orchestrating this huge airlift. And it's been having a fantastic response at film festivals, and people are sort of laughing, crying, cheering at it. And, I'd recommend anyone comes to see that. They'll see a really enjoyable, exciting film.
Well, you're certainly making it sound exciting. I mean, it's... seriously, it's breaking my heart just listening to you talk about it. And we end up, it's a documentary. We end up with these lions then having some sort of free range, or...
Yeah, you see these lions running free in these fabulous, there's lions, for example, a family of 8 were kept in a cage no bigger than 2 queen-size beds. I mean, they were just starving, living on top of each other. And you see those lions freed into 25 acres of rolling grassland in Colorado. I mean, it's a magnificent sight. And it's rare for people. I know people sort of think, oh, this is a sort of a an animal protection environmental film. And people are often a bit wary of going to those. They think it's going to be a bit punishing with seeing lots of animal suffering. But what you see in this film is the transformation of the animals from the bad to the good. You see how they kind of first react to seeing straw and playing with each other and getting company for the first time, right through to this where they get as close to freedom as we could give animals like this. They can't just be released back into the wild. So it's the whole sort of transformation of these lions set against quite an exciting and dramatic backdrop. And I think that's what makes it a very uplifting film. It's also a story of how different people from different backgrounds have came together to change the lives of these animals.
So Tim Phillips, we're talking to Tim Phillips in Los Angeles, maker of the film, what is the title again?
Lion Ark.
And I guess the Ark would be referring to moving the lions from captivity to semi-freedom.
That's right. I mean, there's sort of, in a way, too, that the Ark was the aircraft that mm-hmm. we took. All 25 lions were loaded into this one aircraft, which, again, on its own is quite a logistical feat. And we also had to kind of create. There was nothing there. You know, if you were doing an operation like this here in the U.S., you'd have all of the existing infrastructure. You'd get on the phone to a local vet. Say we were doing this up near Anchorage, we'd probably get in touch with the zoo, say, what facilities do you have? What vets do you have available? Can we liaise with you? Will you assist? Or we'd perhaps deal with a sanctuary. Now, there weren't those things in Bolivia. There was nothing for these animals. So, again, part of the story and the adventure is having to build holding cages like a sort of MASH hospital unit for these lions there and then as they're seized. Very much a kind of frontline animal rescue with these truly magnificent lions at the heart of it. And, you know, it's quite a surprise which lions eventually sort of emerge as the real stars of it as well.
Well, I'm really happy that you called, Tim. Do you get to come up to Anchorage to accompany your film?
Yes, we are. We're really, you know, honored to be up there at the festival there. We've tried to make sure the film is in festivals that we really admire and are very well respected. So we're over the moon to have been chosen for the Anchorage International Film Festival. We've got two screenings on Saturday, December the 14th and Sunday, December the 15th. And Jan and I, who both appear in the film and I directed the film, and Jan's producer of the film, will be there to do Q&As afterwards. And we're especially pleased because the festival has made the Saturday screening a free screening. So it really gives people a chance to go and see something they perhaps wouldn't otherwise go and see. It was filmed. A lot of people have said about the film that it's neither a traditional documentary nor a wildlife documentary. It's actually both because we had a great cinematographer on it, and there's some really stunning film, and it really does come to life on a big screen in a theatrical venue. And I think that's one of the great things about film festivals like this. They give people a chance to go and see in a really great arena these unusual and very interesting films like Lion Ark. And I think if people go and see it, they won't be disappointed.
Well, thank you for calling in. I look forward to meeting you when you get up here, Tim Phillips.
Excellent. Thank you very much for having me on.
All right. That's Tim Phillips, filmmaker of Lion Ark, one of the films to be shown at the Anchorage International Film Festival. And my question is this one of the ones that shows at the Beartooth where we get to eat pizza, too?
No. Tim mentioned it's free, the first showing, and that's at the library at 3:30 p.m. It's not part of we have a family program at the library starting, right. I think, at 1. But it's not part of the, it's free, but it's not part of the family program because while they're, it, it's, it, There are some images of animal cruelty that make it unsuitable for small children. So we put on the program and in the schedule that it's PG-13. It's a wonderful film. If I could take the opportunity also to mention some other documentaries. Our programmer, Cindy Franklin, and her team of screeners did a wonderful job of putting together some great docs. And again, I can't mention all of them, but I'm going to try to quickly go through some that I think would be big audience favorites. One of them is McConkie. It's a film about Shane McConkie, who was an extreme skier and also base jumper, which I really didn't know much about until I saw the film, which basically means that you jump off of bridges in high places and parachute down. It's a really excellent documentary, and Shane McConkie was a compulsive videographer of his own life, so there's all this footage of his family and his youth. A film I think people are going to like a lot is called Antarctica, A Year on the Ice, by a New Zealand filmmaker, and that, as the title suggests, follows people who work at, I think, McMurdo Station in Antarctica for a year. And the filmmaker had to come up with some new technology for filming to come up with cameras that would withstand those extreme cold temperatures. Lion Arc, we just talked about. It's a great film. A film that I think a lot of people would enjoy or find interesting is called Forever, and it's about how people become attached to their pets and what happens now more and more when pets die, which is people are having their pets stuffed or taxidermed or cloned. And the filmmaker doesn't make a judgment. It's very sympathetic to her subject. So I think that's a very interesting film. We have a documentary called Tales from the Organ Trade, which is about organ donations, people who are in need of kidneys, and it's troubling and ethically very interesting because it focuses on people. It starts off in the Philippines and people who are giving away or selling, really, their kidneys for practically nothing. But then also focuses on people in North America who are in need of an organ donation and they've been waiting because they've been on a list forever.
What a great idea for a documentary.
It's narrated by David Cronenberg, and it's made by a Toronto filmmaker.
Wow.
We seem to be having the Anchorage Film Festival seems to have a connection with Toronto. We have more films from Toronto. We have two features from Toronto filmmakers, and it's a lively filmmaking scene there. And we're really glad to have that.
I want to interrupt to take a break here.
Please do.
Come right back to you. We're talking to Jim Parker, the program director for the Anchorage International Film Festival, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank of Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for more than 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Providence Imaging Center, with its newest center in Soldotna, offering CT scans, MRI, ultrasound, and digital X-ray to residents on the Kenai Peninsula. Learn more at provimaging.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
Okay. Well, we're talking about the Anchorage International Film Festival with the program director, Jim Parker, and he was going through a list of documentaries, and I realized that he had another 5 minutes in him, so I decided we better take the break right now, and so we did. So we're back, so shoot me a couple more.
Okay. I could go on forever.
I know you
so,
could.
Cut me off.
I know. I love the way you talk about them because you're clearly in love with them.
I really am. Yes, I'm in love with our program, and I want your audience to be in love with it too, and I want them to come out, and I want people to appreciate the resource they have with our festival. We are showing two documentaries under the title War documentaries, and we're excited about both of those. One of them is called Gold Star Children, and it's about people who have lost a parent in a war, whether it's the Vietnam War, whether it's the Afghanistan conflict, or both of the Iraqi wars. And it's gotten great reviews. Also, a film called Fatigued is paired with that, and that's about the experience in Afghanistan. It's a documentary set in a base in Afghanistan that follows the lives of people that are serving our country in Afghanistan. We have done some outreach to Jaber, Elmendorf, and Fort Ridge for old-timers and hope that some of the military community will come out for that. A film that I really loved, I got to say, is called Harlem Street Singer, and it's a music documentary about Reverend Gary Davis, who is this virtuoso guitar player who's apparently indescribable to describe his technique. But all these all these musicians are interviewed, and for baby boomers like myself and you, you're going to recognize a lot of the musicians are people that you're going to know, people from the Grateful Dead, the Airplane, Jefferson Airplane, talking about how influential Reverend Davis was. And even after he became famous, what he liked to do was go out on the street and preach and sing in Harlem. So that's why it's called Harlem Street Singer. Oh, you know, I could go on and on, but we have films on thematically, two films on mountain climbing documentaries. One called Arctic Housing has two or three Alaska films, including one about housing first in Alaska, the movement. And there's one called Passive House about solar power and using solar power in the north. And and we're also having Snowdance docs, which are made in Alaska. So we have, I think, a really great collection of documentaries this year, and something for everybody.
How many people were involved in watching all these things and picking what actually would?
Well, it varied, but for
Generally, you have it like a panel, right?
Yeah, for documentaries, Cindy Franklin was the lead programmer, but she was able to recruit a great team of screeners, which was four people, mm-hmm. I think. With features, I was a programmer for features, as was Rob Nesvik, and then we had two other people, Kevin McCoy and Chuck Baird, who were acting as screeners and reviewing those films.
And would you watch it together, or would you did it matter?
Well, we wouldn't usually watch them together.
But you'd have to compare notes.
We would meet and we would compare notes, and we would take notes, and then we would sort of debate and work it out as to. And there wasn't initial agreement on everything. And I really think, Steve, that we could have another festival. And I think Teresa could probably verify this. We could have a festival called Best of the Films That Didn't Make It.
Yeah.
And probably fill up 3 or 4 days.
Well, is there any kind of rule about that? I know, like, when you compete for awards, for instance, in journalism, it has to be within that year, whatever the term is.
But
There are. Can you address that?
Sure. Our submission guidelines, it has to be, the film has to be completed by, or completion date should be January 1st, 2012. We go back at mm-hmm. least a year to current. And that's really the only requirement as far as submitting a film. We get... from year to year, it varies the number of submissions we get. This year we had about 300, Jim. Does that sound right?
That's right.
And we chose about a third of those. I think we chose a larger percentage this year than we have in years past. And we do have films that we call special selections that are not part of the regular submission process.
Right. So the option would be there then if there was something that the jury felt that they liked but that somehow didn't quite make the program, there was a possibility of inviting it later or something like that.
Well, yes, but what we are, I mean, things are either in the festival or not, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard, I think, for all the programmers and screeners. There's things that, you know, you really want to fit them in, but when you weigh everything, it's just not possible to get something in.
But. In the programming process, I mean, we start submissions in May, first week of May, and immediately the programmers start viewing films. So it's a long process. We close submissions September 1st, and then the programmers have another month or so to make their decisions, and then they pick the top six or seven from their category, and then we send it to a jury, and the jury picks the top three for each category, and those are the films that are actually awarded the prizes, the awards.
Is there going to be People's Choice again?
I think Jim said that with just the one Audience Choice feature, maybe an Audience Choice documentary on the 15th, the final day of the festival at the Baritone.
But yes, people will be, for feature-length films, when they attend the films, they'll be given a ballot.
Right. We are balloting films. Films 70 minutes and over, feature narrative, and documentaries that are 70 minutes and over.
Well, our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. We're talking about the Anchorage International Film Festival, and so far the comments are coming in by email, and this one comes from Richard. Says, why not hold the festival in January? You mentioned the difficulty of scheduling due to all that's going on in December. My family would have more time in January, but keep up the great work.
Well, do you want to address that?
We actually considered in having it in February this year, and I think Tony Shepard, the founder of our festival and president of the board, put something out on our Facebook page, and I believe that there were more people who responded that wanted to keep it in December than move it. But you know, I understand the caller's point. And I remember one year it seemed like it was years ago, but it was very close to Christmas, and that was frustrating because it was hard to, I just wanted to go to movies, but I felt like I needed to buy a present for my wife. I guess I bought her a present at some point, but it might have been.
You get a little spaced out after, you know, 6 or 7 hours of it.
Well, you know, it depends on, there's people out there like me that can go and watch movies forever and be happy as can be. That's my happiest moments are watching a movie, I think. Well, I'm not alone in that.
As you know, Talk of Alaska is a statewide program. We're talking about an Anchorage event, and naturally, a caller says, from Fairbanks, says, hey, what about us? Which, a good point. Has there ever been any thought given to Anchorage International Film Festival on the road, or
have done that in years past. We'll select a few films and different venues in different cities around the state will get in touch with us, arts organizations and theaters and such.
So you're open.
Oh yeah, sure. info@anchoragefilmfestival.org. Send us an email. Let us know what you're interested in. We'll see what we can do for you in January or February.
Okay, we're talking with Teresa Scott, Executive Director of Anchorage International Film Festival, and Jim Parker, the Program Director this year. Tony joins the program from Anchorage. Tony, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yeah, hey guys. This is Tony that Jim and Teresa are very familiar with, and Steve, I think you know me as well.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. Tony. So just to let the audience know, I'm the founding, I guess you'd call the founder, but the founding director of the festival, and I just wanted to call in briefly. I want to publicly thank Jim for his outstanding job developing the program. From what I can understand of the program this year, it's just one of the best ever. And he's also great with communications, so he's enticed and talked a bunch of filmmakers into coming this year. And he may have mentioned this already, so I may be repeating a few things, but we're looking forward to entertaining somebody from England, somebody from France, and a couple who is Iranian that I believe, and we have an interpreter for them. I'm not sure where, if they're actually coming from Iran, but overall, Jim has really stepped up the program, and he's been just a pleasure to have, you know, this year as the program director. So that's kind of it. I wanted to just say that. I don't know if you guys have any questions for me. It's not really a lot that I can answer program-wise, but if I could just get this in as well, that the festival is a beast to handle each year. A lot of us dedicate a lot of volunteer time. And so I would like to call out to your audience that if you've never been to the Anchorage International Film Festival, please come this year. And if you want to really start off with a bang, come to the opening night film. film Icebound. And by the way, I did try to get Danny to call in. I don't know if the director producer will be calling in here shortly. I kind of blew getting him the message in time, but he has the information. So if you guys are on for another 15 minutes, he might call in. Anyhow, Steve, that's all I really wanted to say. Thanks to Jim, thanks Teresa, and thanks to you for having them on the show.
Well, Tony, it's always my pleasure, and congratulations on having been the one that dreamed this scam up and saw it become something.
Yeah, thank you for that. And it is year 13. Unbelievable. I can't believe it. When you see photos of me from years ago, I look half my age now. The festival didn't really age me. Naturally, I aged myself. But yes, I just can't believe sometimes that it's been 13 long years, and I'm really looking forward to a festival. So we'll see you at the movies.
All right, Tony Shepard, thanks for calling in and checking in.
Okay.
And we'll be standing by for that call if it comes in. And this one, I think we'll send this one your way, Teresa Scott. This one says, I have had negative experiences at the festival in the past. Frequently, I would arrive even an hour early and secure a place at the front of the line. When allowed to enter the theater, I would find 2/3 of the seats reserved by festival pass holders' coats. I would then either have to sit all the way off the side or the front rows to sit with my friends or partner. I haven't attended the festival the past 2 years because of this situation. Has there been any kind of policy change to rectify this issue?
I think it depends on the venue.
Well, he's talking Beartooth.
Beartooth, opening night film, we're always going to have a certain number of seats that are reserved for special guests, filmmakers, and so forth. And we do try to show that film at a different time, so people who weren't able to get in opening night can get in and get the seat they want. We have very little control over the venues, and pass holders are allowed to enter first. They have to get a ticket like everyone else. If they show up late, they don't get in either. My best advice is try to get there early, and the shows that are at the Beartooth, tickets go on sale today, this morning, 15 minutes ago. So if you're looking for a show at the Beartooth, you know, go a couple of days in advance, get your ticket, get there early, get in line. I think everybody pretty much understands that the Beartooth, you know, you may be standing outside in 10-degree weather for an hour before you're let in the theater.
So dress warmly.
Dress warmly. expect the unexpected. We try to get as many people in as possible. We can't always accommodate everyone, and we do the best we can.
Yeah. So basically, there hasn't been a policy change, but you do as best you can. That's the answer, I think.
And it's a film festival. I mean, there's always the unexpected. You can never judge what the attendance is going to be.
Okay. Well, another caller here, but before we take the call, let's go ahead and take the break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
It's Talk of Alaska, and as often happens this time of year, we're talking about the impending Anchorage International Film Festival. We're talking with Teresa Scott and Jim Parker, who is the program director this year, and Bob joins the program from Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bob.
Greetings from the beautiful upper west side of Soldotna.
Mm-hmm.
Happy holidays to you all. That last commercial hit her. That was a mouthful. Yeah, Alaska's paying way too much money on it. Anyway. I've caught some of the movies from the film festival before, and some of them have been pretty cool. I always had an idea for a movie. You know, my mother's father's come from Georgia, and the kin goes all the way back to where Lumpkin County, where the first gold rush in America was, and then made their way across the United States to Alaska. And if I could find a writer, and we could fill in between the first, and I always wanted to call, I thought of calling it From the First Gold Rush to the Last Frontier. And I think it's a great title, if I could just find a writer to help me with that. But anyway, no access to grind today. It sun's out, and just wanted to wish you, Steve, a happy holiday season and a Merry Christmas. And hopefully on to a better new year. I've never been superstitious of 13, but it seems like some people have been having hard times this year.
All right, Bob, thanks for your good wishes. And, of course, we're going to have that holiday greeting show coming up later on. It'll be on the 17th this year.
Oh, on the 17th? Okay. Uh-huh. Well, maybe I'll try to get in. I forgot to mention one of our local AM radio talk show moderators, Tom Randall, has been very much involved in the film industry in Alaska. I don't know if you've heard his name before. He's an ex-Marine, but I think he's been in a couple of films that were filmed here in Alaska. Anyway, well, take care. Thank you.
All right, Bob, thanks. And don't let loose of that idea, because I think it does have potential. Jim Parker, we have gone all this time hardly even mentioning the features. We talked a little bit about the foreign films, but that was it.
True. We have a number of wonderful features. One thing I want to say, as we're talking, I'm realizing there's more I want to say. I urge everybody to go to our website. We have a schedule. Go through the schedule. Besides, we haven't even talked about all the workshops that are available. I think, as you mentioned them briefly, some of them are free, some of them are $8. But besides the films, there's a lot of stuff going on during the week, workshops with filmmakers who are coming. There's a book signing with Alaska author Lael Morgan, her new book about Ted Mala, not Ray Mala, mm-hmm. excuse me, Ted Mala.
Yeah, we all
son.
Know Ted.
You know Ted. I think it's everybody should look at the schedule and see what's going on besides the films and take advantage of these opportunities for workshops. But in terms of features, I'll just try to quickly go through some of them. We have a great film called Delinquent Dancers. It's Bollywood. It's kind of hysterical, over the top. It's fun. It's about these kids who break out of a juvenile correctional facility. Where they have benefited from dance therapy from this beautiful dance therapist who comes and teaches them how to dance, and then they just kind of running around dancing around Mumbai for 2 hours. It's lots of fun. If anybody has a fondness for Bollywood, I'd recommend it. There's a feature called Hank and Aisha that's showing at the Beartooth on December the 8th. It's a really sweet film. I think people are going to like it a lot. The filmmakers are coming. I've already mentioned Everything is Fine Here by the Iranian filmmaker. We have a film playing at the Beartooth on December 9th called Detroit Unleaded. It's one of my favorites. It's about young Arab Americans growing up in Detroit who are running gas stations where they interact primarily with African American members of the community. And it's very funny and worthwhile.
Unleaded.
we are showing, this is interesting, we're showing the film The Frozen Ground, which was, you're familiar with that. It was filmed in Anchorage, and then it was released only, I believe, in the Valley. There was a limited showing, I think, maybe for press only in Anchorage, but it never opened in Anchorage. And we're fortunate to be showing that, and it's playing on December the 14th at the museum and on December 11th at the Alaska Experience Theater. We're showing a film called Nine Full Moons, which I'd like to mention because it has a local connection. The lead actor is a young man named Brett Roberts. I say young. He's young to me. He's probably in his 30s. But he grew up in Anchorage, and his father is Malcolm Roberts, who's a well-known community leader. His mother's Cindy Roberts. He went to West High, and he's the male lead in this film, which is a love story set in Los Angeles. We also have a film called Morning is Broken, which was made by these Toronto filmmakers under this project called the 1K Project, where they try to make films for under $1,000.
Wow.
I could go on. One thing that's important to mention, too, is something we did this year, something different. We had a contest called the Great Alaska Short Film Contest, where filmmakers were invited to make films between 15 and 25 minutes. And, Teresa, when did we start that? It opened up in June?
It opened up in June, and we shut the submission process in October, and the four top films were announced yesterday.
Correct.
They're on the website. They're on our Facebook page. Please visit our website for information about the schedule, any of the films. Festival Genius is our complete listing about each film. It's AnchorageFilmFestival.org is the website, and click on Festival Genius. You can get all the information you'd want to have about every film.
It's working great, yeah. Festival Genius is
wonderful.
Hats off to that one.
The Great Alaska Short, if I could just say, the best four films are going to be shown at the Beartooth on Saturday the 14th at 10:15. If I can just mention two other things, I know we're running out of time.
Yep.
One thing that's great that we've done this year is we've expanded our gala program. So we're now showing two feature films and some shorts. And the first gala session is going to be that. I should explain, those are films that have a gay, mm-hmm. lesbian, bisexual, transgender theme.
Right.
We had wonderful programming this year from Barb Brink. First time we've had a separate programmer for that. And the second gala session will be at Mad Myrna's Bar. We also had this year got a horror programmer. We have a separate horror.
Oh, man, and you saved that for the end.
I'm so glad I did. Okay. The programmer, Kyle Murphy, is a local filmmaker and a horror aficionado, and he knows everything, and he threw himself into it. And that's Saturday night, and I think people will enjoy that. Yeah.
Craig joins the program from Southeast. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Craig. Briefly.
Yeah, I don't know how briefly I can, but I'll do my best. Can you hear me?
20 seconds.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess the best thing to do would be just to have your people there try and reference it on harmswayinusa.net, and it'd give them a synopsis of what I wanted to say.
Oh, I see. So you got one. Did you enter it?
Information for a documentary about Alaska and potential,
so intriguing. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Craig. Wow. Thank you very much, Teresa, for coming in.
Thank you, Steve.
And Jim, great work this year.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your
hard
work.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, next week our subject will be slow fish. Thanks so much to Dave Waldron and Josh Edge. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.